bread to cheese.
You are now listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Simon Fraser University in Burnaby, British Columbia. We strive to provide perspectives that are rarely expressed in mainstream media. If you'd like to know more about us, check out our website at cjsf.ca.
Welcome to Scream Therapy. I'm your host, Jason Schurz. In October of 2018, I found myself in the hospital, sitting across from a psychiatrist who was telling me I had bipolar. I was sent home with a bunch of medication and laid on the couch for a week. I had my iTunes library on shuffle, trying to shake the hornet's nest from my head. Ever since I was a kid, I've been using loud music as a form of therapy. Punk rock and mental health have always been connected. This podcast looks at that connection through the lens of different guests. This is Scream Therapy. Often you can draw parallels between alternative therapies and the punk rock music scene. Clinical social worker Carrie Eberhardy uses something called sand play therapy. It creates a protected space for people to explore different parts of themselves. Much like punk rock, sand play allows freedom and exploration of all emotions, from happiness, sadness, anger, and more. Carrie recently rediscovered the younger part of herself through her favorite band. The Descendants has given her so much joy over the years. With her punk rock morals and through therapies like sand play, Carrie has been able to show her clients a different way of tapping into their inner selves.
My name is Carrie Eberhardy. I use she, her pronouns, and I am living in Santa Fe, New Mexico, the Ogopogé, meaning white shell water place, indigenous land. I have been a fan of punk rock for many, many years, starting back to probably when I was about 15 years old. And actually, I was living in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. That's where a lot of my roots are with listening to punk rock and just really getting into the scene and being around really amazing people, amazing music, and just having this outlet that I didn't know existed really before and really feeling like a part of something. Even though I haven't been in a band, I have always wanted to be a singer in a band. And it's actually something I am working on in my later years. And I've really resonated with getting back to some punk rock roots at this age and stage in my upper 40s. So yeah, the Milwaukee punk scene, punk and metal has just been really, really cool. One of my really foundational heartbreaks was when a friend passed away pretty early He was pretty punk rock, hardcore into the scene and was a sweet friend to me. And he passed away. He was in a band, a hardcore band called Isolation. This was back in 97, and he actually passed away on my 21st birthday, and that was a very foundational time for me to really know what it's like to experience a young person in my community pass away in such a sad way. He was tagging and fell through a three-story building, so that was a really big shock to the community. Something that a lot of us are still, we just kind of wonder what he would be like today. He was a very impactful person, very hardcore, very into not drinking. And back then was just like a really ahead of his time. And so now as sober me, I'm pretty sober at this point in my life. So it's been really nice to be able to go back to some punk rock shows now in my older years. I go on my own oftentimes because I want to go with people. I want to go with friends, but not a lot of friends that I have who live here go to punk rock shows. So I've had to travel and do it on my own. It's something that I've just started enjoying doing. So just a little bit about what I do for a living. I am a psychotherapist in private practice. I've been doing it in private practice for over 10 years now, but in the field of social work for a good 20 years now. So there's that aspect of mental health that I have in, you know, my academic life, in my professional life. And I am still very much on my own healing journey in therapy. A lot of people, when they hear that I'm in therapy, are kind of surprised because I'm a therapist. And I'm like, yep, we actually, most of us are in our own therapy. And so I am so grateful to the therapist that I have now, all of the therapists that I've had over the years. But I've been really going into a pretty in-depth healing journey of healing from childhood. And through my healing of myself, it has been really pretty epic in the work that I can do with my clients and the spaces that I can hold that I couldn't hold before I did this pretty intensive work.
So you mentioned trying to get back to punk rock and even talked about potentially being a singer in a band, which I think would be amazing. I wonder about what it is that pulls people back to punk rock, especially in their later years. I mean, only a certain, I guess, type of people, because some people just, they leave it in their 20s and never come back. They move on. What is it about that scene that maybe drew you back, and what's the parallels there between punk rock and the work that you're doing?
It has always been a part of me, but it was like almost like a dormant part of me as I kind of grew up, got into the professional world, was living as I thought I was supposed to be, always a rebel at heart in many ways and in the best of ways, like just very heart-led, but very like resisting the toxic systems. And I still very much do that. But being in this like midlife time in my 40s, where that's a very, I feel a very punk rock decade, particularly, I don't know, just like as a woman, there's just this like liberation and I don't care thing that comes out. And I feel like I really lost that part of me. I had to go back to younger parts of myself to kind of reclaim them. That's kind of what I've been doing on my healing journey. So just kind of thinking about the Descendants. It's funny, I'm actually wearing my Descendants shirt today. They have been this band that has brought me so much joy. Finally got to see them live in Albuquerque. I had just this urge to get back into the punk rock part of me. Particularly the Descendants was a band that I was like, okay, I need to re-find myself listening to this band and bringing that joy. So I remember getting some merch off their website. It was like a winter hat that I still love to wear, a coffee mug, and just started to listen to all of their albums. And the way that it opened me up, and even just somatically, just listening to the music, and not only the Descendants, I mean, many other bands, but I just very much have these memories of that band in particular, like lifting me out of a pretty big funk. And so it was super awesome to, that was back in 2021. And so then a couple of years later, they're touring and I was like, oh man, I don't have anybody to go with. What am I going to do? And I got myself one ticket and I got a hotel room because it's a good hour drive and just had a blast. Talked to a lot of amazing people. I was at the sidelines of the great mosh pit, watching these incredible people just in their glory. I was in my kind of comfort space, but still close enough. That was definitely a memory of mine to reclaim those lost parts of myself.
I found that as I've gotten older, I've become less right in the action and more watching, and I put on a lot of shows, so I kind of do have to, you know, a bit of like quote unquote security, but I do find that I'm like watching and kind of examining people's reactions and trying to figure out the code of the mosh pit and all those things that I've, when I was in it, it just became instinctual and I knew it off the bat, but it's kind of interesting to look at it as a off the sidelines.
Yeah. What was particularly cool about that show, you know, as I'm standing there, I'm just like kind of taking it in. And this is, you know, the older version of myself that still just has, you know, we all have these parts of ourselves. I know that there were the younger parts of myself with me at that concert and just kind of cheering on and watching the people in the mosh pit. I remember there were just pretty young people going in, people of all genders. And then there was one of the most enthusiastic people in the mosh pit was somebody who was in a wheelchair and going in and out of this pit, just circling around. I'm just like watching him just like go, go, go. And I'm like, there is no stopping punk rock.
Yeah, I remember we had a friend who was in a wheelchair that we actually crowd surfed one time. It was pretty awesome.
So awesome. And it's just like, hey, man, these spaces are for everybody. They can be for everybody. And it's like, I love the fact that I felt really safe, even though I'm by myself around all these like old punks and there's so much going on. And yet there's just this really beautiful community that's there.
The outside world isn't a safe place. And I'm wondering what you do with your clients in order to make them feel safer, maybe even to show them, look, this is a possible thing. You know, this is how I grew up. This is the community that I was part of. Mm-hmm. How do we find that in our lives?
Yeah, great question. So the focus of my private practice for many years was working with queer and trans folks. Specifically, I was recommended in the community. There are a lot of great therapists out there who do similar work, but accessing that kind of safe space and being able to really delve into various identities and the accumulation of complex traumas that can go along with embodying your authentic self is really, really powerful, really brave work. So I've been really honored to be able to connect in a way with these people that they feel safe enough to share their stories. One of the types of work that I have done, gosh, since 2010, it's called Samplay Therapy. And that is all about creating what Dora Kolf is the founder of Samplay Therapy. And it's this free and protected space. And it is just a very sacred space holding. So with this type of therapy, it can be a nonverbal way of holding that safety. And it's through symbols that they're doing the work. It is kind of opening up this land of creating scenes through putting symbols into the sand. And through that, there's a lot of unconscious connections to these symbols. Sometimes there's like universal meaning to various symbols. And sometimes it's very much like, oh my gosh, that reminds me of a particular time in my life or whatever it is. But what's really nice about this particular modality is that they can talk through the process or it can be silent. And being the Samplay therapist, I'm not putting my judgment or anything on to what's happening in this process. I'm literally just like a witness and holding this space. There's so much more that goes on with it, but it's a very beautiful work with delving into the unconscious.
And not to downplay it, but I think of when my kids were young and they were in the sandbox playing with their toys and just that innocence they had and the freedom that they seemed to be having, because all of a sudden you can do whatever you want. You know, you can create whatever you want. You can build whatever you want.
And that's so beautiful. Isn't that such a beautiful thing? And what I love is that is not just for kids. We forget how to play as adults. And if we were to allow ourselves to be more heart-centered and kind of play friendly, the world would be a better place, in my opinion. Just that playful quality. So many times people say, oh, you work with kids. They come into my office and there's shelves of all of these figures and different things. And I'm like, actually, I only work with adults now. I have worked with kids, but that was many years ago. With Samplay Therapy, it is of any age to do this work. And there are a lot of different components to it. It's not for everybody, but the people who are drawn to it, and usually I would say a lot of more punk rock people that I have worked with are like, oh, tell me about that. Like, what is that? I want to do it.
Oh, there's a lot of play in punk rock, even though
absolutely
a lot of people think about it as being rooted in maybe anger or resistance, which it is, but there's also a lot of play there as well.
Mm-hmm. The cool thing too about that is the symbols that are accessible when someone does a Samplay process, it is all different things. So on the shelves are the playful, but you have your really, really dark and scary symbols. It takes a lot, right, to really work with those symbols and kind of get comfortable with those parts of ourselves, because we all have these shadow elements within us, all of us. It's like this shadow and light. And so it's being able to kind of become friends with those angry parts of ourselves, the grief parts, the trauma, all of that kind of thing. And these symbols can really speak to us in ways of like, okay, that might be too scary to talk about or think about in like words. And that's why not only cognitive behavioral therapy works, I mean, that's great in many ways, but to have a modality like this where it's really delving into the unconscious through symbols, it's really pretty epic stuff.
When people come into the office, do they already know that's what they're going to do? Or do they see it and say, oh, are they drawn to it on the spot? Or
yeah, both. So there are people that specifically will come to me saying, I really want to do a Samplay process. Those people usually have done their research. Maybe they're therapists, you know, and they're like, ooh, I'm learning about Samplay and I want to go do that process. Some people come to my office and then they're like, huh, I don't know. Some people will not say a word. And you're like, okay, there are all these shelves of all of these figures, you know, that are like right next to them. And sometimes there's just not a word, right? And so I may or may not bring it up that that is an option for them. I might kind of go into like, hey, just so you know, that's what this is. Some people are like, oh, is this like your collection of toys? So like, okay, you just have this like on display. And I'm like, no, but I'm glad you asked. Some people are very, very drawn right away. And they're like, I need to do this like right now. Tell me exactly what I need to do.
Doing work with folks that are marginalized, transgender folks and queer folks, it sounds like it could be really rewarding in the sense that being able to provide care to them that maybe they're not getting other places. And how did you first get into dealing with those kinds of clients?
It was just something, particularly when I moved to Santa Fe, and I've been here, gosh, 15, 16 years now. When I went into private practice, it was something that was really important to me. I'm also part of the LGBTQ community. One job that I was at prior to private practice, I was doing some community organizing around the state with LGBTQ youth. So that would be a big part of my experience of opening up more to getting involved and advocacy and just learning so much. So then it was just kind of this natural transition for me to focus how I was working. So I would get a lot of referrals. I do take some new clients now. I am shifting a little bit away from a lot of longer term psychotherapy, and there are reasons for that, but it's exciting. And I can also now refer to a lot of therapists in town because there's just a really great community in Santa Fe of a really great mental health workers, but very dedicated to this cause. So
I would imagine that over the years you've come across some punks in your line of work, and I'm just imagining that feeling of having someone come through the door that was wearing a band t-shirt or whatever is into punk rock or even metal, and the feeling of being like, okay, here we go, this is an instant connection.
Yeah. What's interesting about living in Santa Fe is it's a pretty small town, and so there is this way of being a therapist where you're like, okay, here's that work-life balance where you're like, okay, well, I'm out in the community and I'm going to see some music and you're going to see me in a way possibly that's very different than when I'm in the office, right? There can be these overlaps of being out in the community and it's small where sometimes you're out seeing music and then you're like, oh, usually when I go out and about, I'm kind of scanning the room, scanning the area to say, okay, who's here? Can I relax enough to kind of be in my authenticity? And that has been something that I've really had to work on over the years to just allow for that. And I found actually a lot of people that I've been working with for many years appreciate that there is this more authentic side to me. I mean, of course, there's boundaries and stuff, but they also understand the human quality living in the world, even as a therapist.
With a counselor of any kind, a therapist of any kind, that connection is so important. You mentioned like people asking about the toys and the sand play, and they're not toys, but even just like that instant, like, oh, they're interested in those kinds of symbols and pieces. But you know, the same with punk rock, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I'm just thinking back of what I try to collect in the sand play collection, all different kinds of symbols. And I know one of my prized, this is silly, but my sister gave me figures of Beavis and Butthead from like way back when. And those figures, it's funny, there's just some sort of connection with them. And that shows, kind of silly as that was, but there's just this, people are just drawn to them. And then it kind of can start into this conversation about music and will lead to all sorts of places that, you know, go to punk rock, metal, all that kind of thing. And I will on occasion go into a little bit of just, yeah, I'm into all sorts of music, right? I don't make it about me, but I definitely will share just to kind of embrace that connection
I know there's some Descendants figures out there you could add to the collection.
I have seen that on their website. Yeah, I was definitely thinking about that one. I have the coffee mug and I will use that sometimes, and that can strike up some conversations.
Not sure how many people would recognize them, but you know, with Milo, you could have nerdy guy from, you know.
Absolutely. With the client work, it's definitely been a journey. One of the things I'm getting into with some of the work that I'm doing is, and it's actually some of the personal work that I'm doing as well, but there's actually this book, This Is What It Sounds Like, A Legendary Producer Turned Neuroscientist on Finding Yourself Through Music. And so I'm starting to explore these kind of books with my clients to get more into how does music heal, whether they're creating music, listening to music, being in a band, whatever it is, and how much that music can transcend us. So that's been pretty great. I've been getting a little bit into learning how to DJ, and a goal of mine is to be able to bring that into my practice and have this kind of space to be able to have clients explore and start to confront some of their insecurities and make some music and just be in space together like that. So that's been pretty fun. Take it away now. This is your time, this is your life, and this is your time, this is your life, and this is your time, this is your life, and this is your time, this is your life, and this is your time, this is your life, and this is your time, this is your life, and this is your time, this is your life, and this is your time, this is your life, and this is your time, this is your life, and this is your time, this is your life, and this is your time, this is your life, and this is your time, this is your life.
That was my conversation with clinical social worker Carrie Eberhardy, carrieeberhardy.com. For more episodes of Screen Therapy, go to screentherapyhq.com or wherever you listen to podcasts. Big news, the Screen Therapy book is available now. Screen Therapy, A Punk Journey Through Mental Health, tells my story and the stories of others who use punk as a catalyst for mental health. Like this podcast, it links the community-minded punk scene with the mental wellness of the punks who belong to it. To order the book, go to screentherapyhq.com. For merch, check out screentherapy.threadless.com. Okay, enough promoting. It's time for some thanking. Thank you for listening to Screen Therapy. Doing this podcast and talking to folks about punk rock and mental health has been a crucial part of my own mental stability, and it means so much to me that you're out there listening. Screen Therapy is created in the Cathet region of coastal British Columbia, Canada, on the traditional territory of the Klahaman Nation. Contact me at screentherapyhq.com or email me at screentherapypodcast@gmail.com. I'd love to hear from you. Let's talk about punk rock and mental health. Until next time, take care and be well.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM in Burnaby, British Columbia. This is Bird Note. Every hobby community has its lingo, and folks who love birds are no exception. Even the word bird has multiple meanings, says Rosemary Mosco, the author and illustrator behind a new book called The Birding Dictionary.
Bird, noun, a type of animal that is, by all scientific and objective measures, the best one. Verb, the worthy act of beholding a bird and giving it the time and attention it deserves.
Rosemary's tongue-in-cheek guide defines many of the terms that you might hear on a bird outing, like calling a particularly cute bird a burb, or shortening binoculars to just bins or knocks. And for anyone with doubts about who gets to use these words, she also included this entry.
Birder, noun, a person who engages in the hobby of spotting, listening to, and or otherwise perceiving birds. If you love observing birds, you're a birder. If you're new to the hobby, you're a birder. If you love birds but have never heard any of the slang or scientific jargon in this book before, you're a birder. If you're the type of person who judges other birders for not knowing enough about birds, you're still a birder, but you're also an ant. If you're a peregrine falcon and love observing birds, you're just hungry. I feel like there is no hobby where people...
You're listening